3. The third precept. The principle of abstention from sexual misconduct, or contentment. It will help us to understand the third precept, especially in its positive form as contentment, if we can see it within the context of traditional Buddhist cosmology. That cosmology reveals to us what may be described as a three-tiered universe. Mundane existence is divided into three horizontal layers, as it were, the second of which is higher than the first, in the sense of being more refined, positive, blissful, and luminous, and the third higher than the second. These three layers are the planes, worlds, or spheres, the terminology varies, of sensuous desire, karma, of archetypal form, rupa, and of no archetypal form, arupa. The plane of sensuous desire comprises, in ascending order, the hell world, the world of hungry ghosts, the world of asuras or anti-gods, the animal world, and the world of the lower gods, from the four great kings, or gods of the four directions of space, as they are also called, up to the gods who control the creations of others. The plane of archetypal form comprises altogether 16 sub-planes, from the heaven of the gods belonging to the company of Brahma, up to and including the five pure abodes, which are inhabited by non-returners, that is, those great spiritual beings who have developed transcendental insight to such an extent as to break the five fetters binding them to the plane of sensuous desire, so that they will no more be reborn there. The third plane, the plane of no archetypal form, comprises four sub-planes, all of which are inhabited by Brahmas, a class of spiritual beings superior even to the gods, though sometimes spoken of as such. Much could be said about these three planes of conditioned existence. All that concerns us at the moment is the fact that, on the planes of archetypal form, there is no such thing as sexual dimorphism, that is, no separation into male and female. The inhabitants of these planes all being what we would call, from the human point of view, androgynous. Sexual dimorphism, or separation into male and female, is found only on the plane of sensuous desire, including, of course, the human world. Since spiritual life consists, in objective or cosmological terms, in a progression from lower to higher planes and worlds, spiritual life also consists in a progression from a state of biological and psychological sexual dimorphism to a state of spiritual androgynousness. Moreover, since a state of sexual dimorphism is a state of polarization, tension, and projection, it is also a state of discontent. The state of spiritual androgynousness, on the contrary, is a state of harmony, relaxation, and content. Observance of the third precept, therefore, does not consist simply in abstention from the various well-known forms of sexual misconduct, but also, and more importantly, in the experience of contentment, the vertical as distinct from the horizontal counterpart of such abstention. In meditation, the state of sexual dimorphism is transcended. In meditation, one ceases for the time being to be either male or female. This is because in meditation, in the sense of shamatha bhavana, or development of calm, one progresses through the dhyanas, or states of higher consciousness, as they may be called, and these states of higher consciousness are the subjective, psychological counterparts of the different subplanes of the planes of archetypal form and no archetypal form. While meditating, in the sense of actually experiencing the dhyanas, one is therefore a deva or brahma. In terms of the Western spiritual tradition, one is an angel and leading an angelic life. angels, of course, being by nature androgynous. It is thus no accident of language that the Sanskrit word for what we call celibacy, or more correctly, chastity, is brahmacharya. Pali brahmacharya. Which literally means faring, practicing, or living like Brahma. That is, not merely abstaining from sexual activity, but transcending the sexual dimorphism on which sexual activity and sexual desire are based. This is why Vajraloka, our meditation and retreat center in North Wales, is dedicated not only to meditation, dhyana, but also to celibacy, brahmacharya. Meditation and celibacy go together. They mutually reinforce each other. For the same reason, we encourage single-sex situations of every kind. This is not simply in order to curtail the opportunities for sexual misconduct, but also, more positively, to give both men and women some respite from the tensions of sexual polarization, and to provide them with an opportunity of transcending, for a few moments, the state of sexual polarization and being simply a human being, and, to some extent, a true individual. For those who wish to develop as individuals and to progress on the path to enlightenment, meditation and single-sex situations of every kind are, in the absence of transcendental insight, absolutely indispensable. From all this, it also follows not only that abstention from sexual misconduct is not enough, not only that one must experience contentment, but that one should not think of oneself as being either a man or a woman in any absolute or exclusive sense. After all, according to traditional Buddhist teaching, in the course of the beginningless series of one's existences, one has been both a man and a woman many times. One has even, perhaps, been a god, an androgynous being. Within a perspective of this kind, it would seem quite ridiculous to think and to feel that, just because one happened to be a man or a woman in this existence, one was a man or a woman forever and ever. World without end. Amen. To the extent that one ceases to think of oneself as being a man or a woman in any absolute and exclusive sense, to that extent one will cease to speak and act as though one was a man, and nothing but a man, or a woman, and nothing but a woman. That is, one will cease to behave in that sexually ultra-polarized fashion which for Buddhism is exemplified by the figures of the male and female Asuras. Male Asuras are fierce, aggressive, and very ugly, rather like the orcs in The Lord of the Rings. The female Asuras are voluptuous, seductive, and very beautiful, and eat any human males who are so unfortunate as to fall into their clutches. What the male Asuras do to human females, we are not told, though no doubt it can be imagined. Members of the Western Buddhist Order have no wish to resemble Asuras of either sex. This does not mean that sexual differences can be simply ironed out or ignored, or that it is possible to pretend that they do not exist. A feeble and colourless unisexuality, which merely seeks to negate sexual differences on their own level, is not to be confused with the ideal of spiritual androgynousness. A castrate is not an angel. Certain representations of angels in Christian art notwithstanding. Here, as elsewhere in the spiritual life, what is needed is not negation, but transformation. Not evasion, but progression. So far as the third precept is concerned, especially in its positive formulation as contentment, this progression is from an absolute identification with one psychophysical sex to a relative and provisional identification with it, and from a relative and provisional identification with it to no identification at all. If we can only see this, whether with or without the help of traditional Buddhist cosmology, we shall understand the third precept more deeply. And because we understand it more deeply, we shall observe it with greater confidence. Theory and practice will both be clear. They will be clear as crystal. For the third precept is a pillar of crystal. It is a pillar of crystal because crystal is pure, transparent, and brilliant, and either colorless or only slightly tinged with pink or blue.